Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I wrote the Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, as well as the Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. This episode features one of three guests who were part of my weekly hour-long NPR show broadcast over the air every Sunday on WLIW-FM 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island where it has broadcast continuously for over 15 years. This show is about dogs, cats, and other creatures who share the planet with us. Please check out my other Pet Talk podcasts at TracyHotchnerPets.com. This show would not be possible without the longtime support of Woruva, the pet food company founded and privately run by David Foreman, who named it after his rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva is a quirky name for a company with whimsical names for the dozens of different cans and pouches of cat food they make. But what sets them apart is how serious David is about high-quality nutrition. They were the first pet food company to use human edible ingredients and process them in the same facilities that make human food, remaining privately owned and run, accountable only to their own high standards. This show is also made possible with the generous support of Dr. Elsie's, the privately owned litter and cat food company founded by Dr. Bruce Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian. He personally created many styles of litter to make sure that even the fussiest cats would not have out-of-litter box problems, the number one reason people abandon their kitties. Dr. Elsie also created his own brand of cat food called Clean Protein, the first dry cat food I can recommend because it's based on the protein found in a cat's natural prey. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of my New York Cat Film Festival, of which I am the founder and director, along with the annual New York Dog Film Festival, which premiere in New York City every October and then travel the USA and Canada supporting local animal welfare groups. Go to dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com to find out when we'll be where. I learned about a beautiful memoir called Maddie, Milo, and Me by Ann Abel, and a publicist sent it to me, which is how usually books get sent to me, someone doing the PR. And along with the book, notes and the book, or the asking me, did I want to cover the book, which sounded great. It was about a woman who had adopted a difficult dog, was all I knew at first. They had a link to a moth presentation by Ann Abel. And I was really interested. How do you get to give a moth presentation? And is it difficult? And are you glad you did it? And her moth presentation was charming and totally made me want to read the book, but I was also really curious about it because it really is about this book, and I wonder, did that somehow lead to it getting published, or was it already published? And welcome to the show, and congratulations on a truly unique and such funny and relatable and also in many ways surprising and disturbing story, because every so often during this funny and wonderful story of you on your dog mission for your children, there's mentions of this relationship with your mother who really sounds quite dreadful, but you always just sort of lay a little comment here and there. It's like, she did what? She said what? Huh? And then the story carries on. So welcome to the show, and I have a lot of questions to ask you. Is Milo is still with you, I presume, yes?
No. Milo died about 15 years ago.
Okay, I just want to make that clear.
There's Ryan who comes in at the end,
right,
the last chapter, and he's now 19 and a half.
Oh my God, the book feels very present to me, although I realize that you refer to 9/11 just having happened. So I forgot that would obviously date it in its way. It feels like it's happening right now, which is obviously a compliment to the writing. It feels so immediate and so real. And always so funny. Let's sort of go backwards to forwards. How does a person do a moth presentation? And can you describe it? Because it's a kind of famous and special thing, better than a TED Talk or different than one, a real TED Talk, not the fake ones called TEDx.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole nother thing. Anyone can do a TEDx talk. I've had people say, oh, TEDx talk. It's like, you can do that in a high school auditorium. That's not the real deal. But the moth is something very particular. At some point, my father did the moth when he was 95.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought, well, doing anything when you're 95 in front of an audience has to be daunting. But I didn't understand. The moth is like this big thing. Can you explain it and say how you got there?
All right. Well, it's actually an organization that's all over the world and every country, even Antarctica, I was told. So I moved to Chicago with my husband in 2016 for what was supposed to be 4 months. Well, he took a job at the University of Chicago and in January, and it's 8 degrees out. I didn't know what I was going to do. So I signed up for improv because that's what you do in Chicago. But after a couple months, I got kicked out. I was not very good at improv.
Aww.
So I came home. Again, it's 8 degrees out. I don't know anyone in Chicago. And my dog walker, my new dog walker, showed up. And I said, what do you do when you're not walking dogs? And she said, oh, I host an open mic for storytelling in the back of a bar. You should come. And I had never heard of storytelling before.
Me either.
And I was like, well, I'll come. But and she goes, and you should tell a story. I said, well, I'll come, but I'm never going to tell a story. So eventually I had this story about, I have another memoir coming out fall 2025. So I had a story that I thought would be good. And let me just backtrack and say, I suffer with severe, severe writer's block. I actually got my MFA in writing in my 40s when I was kind of retooling, but I just suffer with terrible writer's block. But here, I had this one idea for a story, so I went to the back, and I don't go to bars very often. My husband and I went to the back of a bar, and they said to me, do you want to sign up? Do you want to sign up? And I said, absolutely not. I'm just here to watch.
Right.
And then one man got up and talked about how when he went to Woodstock back in the day, he cheated on his fiance 3 times. The second man got up and said how hard it was for him when his wife was in labor because, you know, she wasn't paying any attention to him. And a third man got up and said, oh, you know, he abused his first 2 wives, but now he's remarried and it's like he's better for and he's a great human being.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, my God. So I just turned to my husband and I never say things like this. I said, I can do better than this.
That's adorable.
So I got up and I signed up. I had never stood in front of a mic. And I remembered a story, all of a sudden, an anecdote from 40 years earlier. When I had decided we wanted to get pregnant, and, you know, so I stand up and I stand in the mic, go to the mic, and I said, I came here to tell a story about Bruce Springsteen, to learn how to tell a story about Bruce Springsteen, but instead I'm going to tell us, and everyone cheers.
Right.
And then I said, but instead I'm going to tell a story about sex. And of course they cheered even louder.
Adorable.
And I had 7 minutes, but it only took 4.5 minutes. I told my story. Everyone's like, came up to me. So I got this immediate positive feedback. So I decided I would work on the story that I had about Bruce Springsteen. And I went to an open mic and I told it. And then I started little by little coming up with little ideas. You know, it's easier in a way. These are 7-minute stories. And then eventually people started asking me, they had curated shows and they said, would you come tell a story? And I was doing that, and then someone said to me, you've got to go to the Moth. I had never heard of the Moth before. And I'm like, okay, I'll go. And he said, and you have to tell a story there. And, you know, I had no idea what the Moth was. And the way it works is they have, depending on different cities, how often, but every month in Chicago they have a show, and there's a topic. And you have to come up with a 5-minute story on this topic. Then you go, you put your name in a hat, well, maybe it's a bag.
Okay.
You put your name in a hat. They call one by one, they call 10 people. So you have no idea if you're going to get called. You don't know how many names there are in the hat. And one by one, all of a sudden you get called. So fortunately, I didn't get called the first couple times. But then, and I had never, you know, there's like 300 people in the audience. I had never stood on a stage. And
wow.
The lights are blaring. You can't see the audience. But eventually I won. So I told – and then what happens is they pick 3 teams of judges from the audience. And after each story, each team gives a number. And at the end of the evening, they add it up. And then there's a winner. And they call it a story slam winner. And then the winner goes on to what they call a grand slam, where they get 10 winners. And you tell it, maybe now there's 1,000 people in the audience.
Whoa.
So I won a couple stories in Chicago, slams, and then we moved to New York, and my goal was to win one story, one slam in New York City. So I came up with this five-minute story about adopting Milo.
Yes.
And the one that you watched. And again, you don't know if you're going to get called. So you're just sitting there. And if my name's Ann Abel, and they'll go, Andy. And you, like, your heart jumps when you hear Andy.
So it's like the Oscars when there's several women with the same first name.
Yeah.
Which happened this year. It's like, oh, don't get up until you hear the last name.
Right, right, exactly. So I got up and I told the Milo story, and then I sat down, and then they call out the winner, and I was sure I hadn't won. And so I'm just sitting there, and they're calling me, and then all of a sudden I realized it was me. And then the weird thing was I went back, you know, to a couple more shows, not to tell a story, but it's just amazing that all these people, just 300 young people, most of them are young, they'll show up to hear other people tell stories. It's just amazing.
It's kind of wonderful, though. It feels like some...
It is.
Like a throwback to the cavemen era, where you sit around the campfire telling oral history or oral, you know, our backstories. It's a wonderful...
And anyone can tell it. You know, you just... got to put your, you know.
You were very brave, and you didn't look all that brave when you were doing it, but once they started to chuckle at what you were saying, you got into a stride. But the story was wonderful because, on the one hand, you were talking about having adopted a dog that caused grievous bodily harm to your son, but still holding on to him because you just couldn't bear the alternative, and how... at the end, at least, of that part of the story, Milo was a better boy. But the story of going to the dog training, which we should talk about it, because it's, you told it so beautifully, so succinctly, it is something anyone could relate to. It's the beginning of the book, though, that I particularly love, Anne, and I think anybody will love it. It's how you got to the place of having a dog at all, having never wanted one, adamantly not wanted one, but having three sons, one of whom in particular really wanted a dog, and the number of pets you got for him, hoping that at some point he would forget about dogs. And you tell it
or
so...
Or go to college.
Or go to college, yes, exactly. And in fact, once you do get Maddie, you kind of hope that Maddie will hang on until he goes to college, because... once you fall in love with Maddie, I mean, you're like severely and deeply and totally in love. The funny thing, you just now you talked about your husband, but in the first, I don't know, chunk of the book, I got the impression, because you kept saying I, that you were a single mother of three sons.
Oh.
Because you didn't really, the husband, you never said our sons or, you know, my husband
oh.
took son
oh,
number
no.
two. I know you weren't, I mean, I figured it out. But I thought,
oh, my God, he's my rock.
I got that finally.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that finally.
Oh, no.
But in the beginning, you would say I, which is not inappropriate. I mean, why would somebody always refer to our sons when it's really your story, right? So they are your sons. So they're my sons. But I thought, God, she's so plucky. She's got three sons, and she's got the time to go to Petco and look for supplies for the frog. I was very impressed. And then at one point when you said you'd called Andy – asking a question about the dog, I thought, who's Andy? But I figured it out. But it was good.
Okay.
It was kind of like another surprise, because in a way you were, as you said, you were trying so hard to be a good mother. And that's how you wind up getting a dog against, you know, every bone in your body. How did you remember back to that time, since it really was a long time ago? I assume you didn't write it at the time, although you have been a writer all this time.
No, to be honest, I guess I have a good memory. It was an important part of my life. And actually what happened was I had started writing, and let me just say how I ended up writing two books, even though I have severe writer's block, is that when I was in Chicago doing storytelling, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to get help getting even better. So I contacted this woman who was a big storyteller, hoping she would take me on. And the first thing she said to me was, asked me was, if I have a magic wand and I could grant any wish you want, what would it be? And I thought she was going to ask me my goals as a storyteller.
Right.
And I said, to write a book. I mean, I hadn't you know, I can't write. I have writer's block.
Right.
And she said, well, then that's what you've got to do. And, oh, my God, it was like, you know, she was right. And for 3 months, I just fought myself on it. I just couldn't do it. And I'm an avid exerciser, and every morning, that's how I deal with my depression. I get on that bike, and I just know 50 minutes later, I'm going to feel better.
Yep.
So finally, after fighting myself for so long, not doing it, and getting kind of angry at myself for not doing it, one day after I worked out, I just said, okay, I'm going to go sit down at my desk, and from 11 to 1, I'm just going to sit here and try and write. And that was how I started. And so this book that's coming out in fall 2025, the first manuscript, and don't get scared, but it was 1,000 pages because
ouch,
anything that popped into my head, I just wrote it because I didn't have the, because, you know, part of the, and I was brought up to told, don't speak, nothing you have to say is interesting. So I couldn't really, if something popped into my head, I couldn't say, no, that's not worth it writing about, because then I wouldn't write anything.
Correct.
So I just wrote, so in that 1,000 pages, basically anything that ever happened to me in my life is in those pages. But, you know, of course, over many, 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 many manuscripts, it got cut down.
Well, let me talk,
but then,
let me speak to that topic of an editor and a publisher and the fact that you know when the book's going to come out. So I look at this book, Maddie, Milo, and Me, a memoir. It's great looking, as good looking as any book that, and this is only the advanced reader copy, but it's great looking, comes across my desk. And I'm just curious who the publisher is, because the publicist seemed to be an independent publicist, and everybody who is in the publishing world or the writing world knows that even if you have a traditional publisher called a trade publisher, any of the things you guys have heard of, whether it's Knopf or Penguin or Simon & Schuster, they have a PR department and person, but often people will hire an outside person to give even more opportunity to get on this show or to be, you know, reviewed in the Chicago Tribune or something. So I was curious, and I see that the publisher is called She, as in female, She Writes Press. And I think that's funny. I haven't heard of them. Sounds all very like feminist, and we're sisters in this together. And I look it up and see that it's kind of self-publishing. And I start to read the book, and then I read the book, and I think, this is such a good book and so well-written and so, you know, accessible, therefore commercial. Lots of people would like to read it. Why is it not with a traditional publisher? And I have to assume that you, like 99% of authors, including me, have a brutal time figuring out how to get to an agent, much less a traditional publisher. Is that why you went with this? It calls itself
exactly
a hybrid publisher, but frankly and honestly, it's very expensive to you, self-publishing. Is that why?
Yes. Well, I'm 70 years old, and to start dealing with age, like, you know, I tried a couple, and it just didn't work. And I didn't want to spend 5 years trying to get this going. And then I actually, someone from Chicago, I was living in New York then, but someone on Facebook, a storyteller from Chicago, posted that she had just had this book put out by She Writes Press. So I looked them up, and one of their, one of the reasons they exist is the woman, Brooke Warner, who's, I think she's the publisher.
Right.
She worked for a press many years ago, and she said she had all these manuscripts would come up and they would get rejected because the people didn't have a social media presence.
So disgusting. So
and
disgusting.
And that was me.
Yes.
I didn't have a social media. And she, I mean, she's a real powerhouse. Now she's got the books starting in August are going to be distributed by Simon & Schuster.
I saw
that.
She's
a real,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is true, and people that are on the receiving end, there's a lot of readers that listen to my show, a lot of book groups that listen to my show. Hi to, you know, Leisha's End in Virginia, where pretty much every book that comes on the show, they read it in their reading group, and Maddie, Milo, and Me is such a home run winner. You guys are going to love it. But I hope that other reading groups will embrace it, because there's so much to talk about. But this problem of publishers, I mean, it's going to be the next nail in the coffin of publishing as an industry. The idea that someone with a social media following, that people on TikTok, hello, or Instagram right. have followers when they talk about their breakfast, their smoothie, their makeup, whatever gross thing they're promoting and getting paid for, that those people, A, are capable of writing a good book, and that any of the people who follow them read books, I'm going to say no to that. I don't believe that there's that connection. But publishers are so confused about how to find readers that they go to this kind of what they think is the so-called low-hanging fruit. Well, you have X thousand of people that look at all the little junk, I'm going to call it junk, that you put up on the internet, and therefore they're going to go out and buy a book and spend money on it and sit down and read a book? I don't think so. I think it's great that you got it published so well because...
Well, let me just, not that I want to do an ad for She Writes Press, but it's not exactly like independent publishing. Because, first of all, it has to be accepted, you know. And secondly, they do the cover, they do the, you know, there's a lot. They do the layout, you know.
Oh, no, it's a great-looking book, but they charge you $10,000. I mean, that was going to be the punchline.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, we have to make this really clear. It's great for women to support other women, and I don't know that it says She Writes Press. Are all of the authors women? Probably,
yeah,
maybe.
Absolutely.
All the employees are. I looked on their website.
No, all the authors. All,
yeah.
And they actually call themselves, I mean, I don't get involved, but they're sisters.
Yeah, I know. So I just want to say this is not a plug for or against them, but it is for anyone who could be Ann Able, who has always wanted to write a book, has written 6 books in a bottom drawer. Many of us have 6 books in a bottom drawer. It's an interesting way to get your book into the world, but they charge you $10,000 after they have put you through a process of saying, okay, we accept your book. And the $10,000 doesn't even include outside PR. This is the world we live in, I guess. And not everybody has $10,000 easy dollars because you're never making back $10,000 on your book. You're just not. I mean, I suppose somebody in Netflix could find a book and theoretically...
Happened a couple of times.
It's happened a couple of times because lightning strikes perfectly nice cows in the middle of a field and fries them. I'm just saying it's not what you should expect to happen.
Yeah.
Right? So I still want to say I'm really glad you found a way to put this lovely story, funny and quirky and unexpected and genuine and just so good in so many ways that you found a way to get it between covers. And what it costs you or what it or how a traditional publisher missed out on it isn't really the point. But I do want to bring it up because it was so clear in the Moth presentation that you were a person who would kind of although now you explain you've been practicing a lot, it seemed like you almost were up there, I won't say reluctant, but you were like, you know, not a gung-ho, I'm Amy Poehler, I'm going to knock you over with my clever, funny story. The opposite of that, but it was so real and so darling. And the love for dogs that you developed, Maddie and Milo and now Other, who's 19, which is a crazy old age, and we're all going to be green with envy that you get to have a dog that lives that long. Really, it's so rare. It's so touching how you became such a dog woman and such a dog family. And thank you to your middle son, Joseph, for nagging you all those years because he's given you so many stories in this book. And you tell the stories in a way that I think just makes us all grateful for the dogs in our lives and more aware of the nuance of sharing a life with a dog. And I think you do that incredibly well. And that takes, it takes a writer's eye. And you do talk about suffering from depression in the book and your childhood that you remark on in these very delicate, just dropping these little comments in. Oh, like that note your mother wrote you that said, I never wanted to have you. It's like, wait, is she kidding? Because you're funny. The book's wry.
You know what my favorite one was? When we came home with Maddie and I was, you know, I had been dreading getting this dog and now I'm in love. And I tell her that, and we talk a little, and I said, oh, you know, the boys are so excited. She's so sweet. And she said, well, I don't think they're so sweet. And then, you know, and then she goes, my youngest son, Josh, he was like 6 or 5 at the time. And then she says, Josh will go to college and the dog will die. I do the arithmetic. How do you come up? And of course, every night after that, our days were numbered, you know. But yes. How do you come up with these
yes.
things?
And you know, you say these things and at first you think, well, no, she must be joking. And then it's clear it's not a joke at all. It's exactly what happened. But you tell it in a way that we can see your pain. And you have learned to cover pain with a sense of humor, which is great because that's a good coping mechanism. The other line, and it's not a spoiler because Maddie does die and get accidentally hit by a truck, but the comment that your mother makes is insane. It's so vicious, in which she says, "Well, that truck driver was delivering the bar mitzvah present right. to my grandson." When the truck hit Maddie, it's like
she was so
what?
Proud of that. Well, she's a narcissist and she wants to be the center of anything. So now she got to be the center of this story.
But a dreadful story, a devastating story for you.
Well, it was really hard. My son was in college in Boston where they live, and she took him out to dinner at the end of the year and with some other friends, and she told this story, and he was just. You know, he felt horrible sitting there listening to her gleefully tell
yes.
about when his dog was killed, that
yeah.
she killed his dog.
Yeah. It's really quite extraordinary. She is like the evil stepmother in a fairy tale. But she was your mother, and you survived it, and you've coped with the baggage that she left you with. But you've emerged from it as this wonderful writer and this great storyteller. There's also a very charming story about him, and it's so sweet. You say, my son was in school in Boston where there are, I don't know, 45 colleges. One of them happens to be Harvard. And he tells you the story after Maddie dies of that Maddie was the person
oh, yeah.
home when he found out he got in. And it really, it choked me up a little that he remembered as a young guy that was the person he told, the first person he was able to tell this very thrilling news in his life, and that he was always going to keep that inside himself. Now to find out that his wicked grandmother besmirched that, you know, that she smeared dog dew on that event is, well, you know, everyone has evil in their lives, and some of us have been able to sidestep it more easily than you because you were a captive child. You did an amazing job in your life raising these sons and in providing them so many different pets in the beginning of the story. It's just hilarious how many different pets and how hard you tried and the terrariums and the toys and hoping this frog would not keep getting bigger because you were told it would only get as big as the size of the terrarium you got for it, which I have to ask Dr. Doug Mader on my show Exotic Pets because that seems unlikely. But it's possible. But anyway, it's what you were told.
I wasn't going to say after a few tanks, I decided
you
I
gave
wasn't
up. Yeah.
Any chance.
But in the end, you got dogs who became the size they were and stayed the size they
and
were.
And just, I have actually this one 19-year-old Chihuahua rescue, and then I have 2 14-year-old Bichon rescues.
I love it. And yet the first time you saw a Bichon, which you talk about in the book, at the rescue where you got Milo, the dog from hell, in a way, the Bichon was such a whirling dervish that even the boys in you said, could you take him out of the room?
Yeah.
He's making us dizzy. We've run out of time, Ann Able. I just want to say to people in this wonderful rambling conversation, you need to get Maddie, M-A-T-T-I-E, Milo and Me, a memoir by Ann Able, A-B-E-L. You will love it. And we want to support writers who find their own path to getting their book out into the world and support the wonderful stories they have to tell. This is a perfect example of that. Thank you for being here. You're more than welcome back with your new book when it comes. And thank you for paring it down from 1,000 pages. Even I have my limits. Thank you, Anne.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. There are a few more special companies that make this show possible, and I hope you'll try their products because they support my mission to entertain you with valuable information and advice. This show is supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, where they create holistic pet wellness products with an emphasis on their stewardship of the Pet Sustainability Coalition. Earth Animal makes a dazzling array of healing products for dogs and cats, as well as the innovative dog chew, No Hide, and the hybrid dry food, Wisdom, which is sometimes all that my picky Weimaraner Maisie will eat. The show is also brought to you in part by Evermore Pet Food, privately owned by two dedicated women who take human edible, ethically sourced ingredients to gently cook dog food that is then frozen in pouches and shipped right to your door. They founded and run their own company and answer to their own high standards without interference from venture capital investors. My dogs love it every single day.